At the end of the day, it's up to the panel to decide what the outcome will be.
That is not acceptable as a professional athlete these days.
You can't assume that that is the way of the world now.
I've just seen too many times recently where he's just been hit.
We just don't have that sort of foot on the throat where we really just put teams away.
He looked twice the player when Ponga's on the field as well.
Yeah.
On the Big Sports Breakfast, time now for Pressing Matters.
Yes, Pressing Matters on a Tuesday, and the Bunnies, well, it was a very ordinary Saturday for them, wasn't it, there at a core stadium, 34-4, the loss to the Warriors, and Latrell Mitchell now out for 3 weeks after that forearm to Sean Johnson's head, and he had that lifting tackle that he was involved in as well. So, Cameron Murray, always difficult facing the media in the press conference after you've had an ordinary loss. Let's just recap what he had to say, the South's captain, after the loss to the Warriors on Saturday in relation to a couple of those incidents involving Mitchell.
Latrell, he's got some good self-reflection, and he normally knows what he needs to change before anyone tells him. So, but yeah, passing by conversations won't hurt. So pretty fresh after the game now, but something to think about over the weekend, I think.
That's Cameron Murray post-match there on Saturday. And I just do wonder, Loz, internally, how much everything's wearing thin there at Souths. How happy are they?
Oh, I think everyone wants to know what state the group is in and how supportive are they of each other, and whether rumours that there's a divide is true. The only way you can shut people up is by performing on the field and making sure that all your actions are done in the best interest of the team. And I think at the moment, there's some people trying hard. There's other people that are frustrated. And what happened on the weekend in particular with that action from Latrell, that was just out of frustration, I think. He didn't need to do it. And he's let his teammates down, you know, when they need him most. Yeah. And that's the problem with South at the moment. They're all probably going around trying to thinking they're solving the problem and all knowing what the answer is. But I don't think they've all come together as a group and decided that we've got to change the narrative of this club, and we've got to get on and we've got to play strong football, and we've got to do what the coach is telling us to do, and we've just got to make it happen. And you've got to be desperate when you get on that football field. I haven't seen that often this year.
And you know, just how it's going to hurt all their individual representative aspirations. You look at players like, well, obviously Cookie, Colin Matangi, who is an incumbent.
There's not many that will get picked in representative football at the moment.
So,
with the way they're going. And if they've got aspirations of playing Origin, well, they got, what, 6 weeks to shape up, or they'll miss the boat because there's other people in their positions playing a lot better. But that's far from their concern at the moment. Their concern is they're playing for their club and they're playing for their coach. And at the moment, Jason Demetrio would be tearing his hair out thinking, what do I do to get the best out in these players? He's probably tried everything. But at the end of the day, it's your position as a footy player to go out there and give it your all. That's what you're signed up to do. Regardless of what distractions are going on around your club, you've got to get yourself in the best possible shape. You've got to have the best preparation during the week, and you've got to go out there and nail your job. And that's not happening.
Well, we saw a controversial try awarded in the Manly Penrith game at Four Pines on Saturday. Tolu Kola for Manly ran away with it after it appeared to be a knock-on in the lead-up. Let's hear what Graeme Ennersley had to say about it at his weekly briefing yesterday.
A lot of the debate about this has been generated by people saying, well, referees have always ruled that sort of thing as a knock-on. So it hasn't been so much a criticism of what actually happened here. It's more by way of comparison to other incidents that have happened previously. So, I've been one who, over many years, have been quite critical at times of referees, you know, saying every time the ball hits the deck, it's a knock-on. At times you would have thought that knockbacks disappeared from our game.
Graeme Ennersley there yesterday, just as coaches defend their players often post-match, Graeme Ennersley's often defending the referees.
I think he makes a fair point, though. I think because of what we've seen in the past, that's a knock on every day of the week. But what are we going to see this week? What are we going to see if it happens again? Is it just the luck of the draw? That's when people get confused, and that's when Graham will have to front up again.
That's as knock on as a knock on.
That's a knock
on.
Do you like the
setup with NRL and Graham Annesley coming out and explaining, I guess, decisions like? Do you like this setup, or would you rather? You know what? Just people are going to have their beef anyway. People are going to call it a knock on or be peed off with the decision, and just let it slide. Or do you like the system that you come out and actually front it and explain to the fans the reason why?
Never really thought about it, to be honest with you. But I take my hat off to them for coming out and putting their hand up and owning a mistake when it happens. I like that. Yeah. But
we should never complain about transparency.
No. But this decision there, and as I said, he makes a fair point, because I think at times we've all gone, mate, that's not a knock on, but they rule it a knock on. So we've just become accustomed to seeing that and going, that's a knock on. That was a knock on for mine every day of the week. Every day of the week.
Without a doubt.
And I know there's some people that would say, oh, well, it wasn't a knock on. And technically, they might be right if you look at the angles and where the ball came out of his hand and whether it went forwards or whether it went backwards. But, mate, that's been ruled a knock on for as long as I can remember.
100 plus years it's been a knock on. Okay. Now, Debbie Kapitis, of course, buying the Winx filly by Piero yesterday for $10 million. Let's have a listen to Kapitis after the sale.
To have been able to secure this filly on behalf of my family, to be able to hopefully see if she can get to the racetrack. If she can't get to the racetrack, she'll be an amazing mum. She's Australian forever, and she's going to be just fabulous.
And that should be celebrated, Debbie Kapitis there yesterday, because certainly John Stewart, this American tycoon, he gave every indication he was going to buy the filly, and he said he'd go to $9 million, and he did. He just didn't go to 10. So she stays in Australia, the Winx filly. But, I saw a few people, I think it was Tom Magner there yesterday. It is a great credit to our industry that we have that sort of international interest. Willing to put up their hand.
Yeah.
And I was thinking actually yesterday back to, Matt Stewart, the UK commentator, sort of, oh, she hasn't beaten anything, she's no good, and all that sort of commentary. Well, she must be all right if someone wants to pay $10 million for it, and an underbidder from the United States wants to put up $9 million for a progeny.
Oh, yeah, but there would be some people that would say that that's too expensive. There will be people that say that that's too expensive. What is it? The beauty is in the eye of the beholder. And if you want something, and you go and get it, you'll think it's cheap. You will think it's cheap.
You can justify it, can't
you? Yeah, oh, most definitely.
And it's all relative. That's the other thing as well. To the rest of us, we're sitting going, what? $10 million bucks? But, mate, $10 million to, I don't know, someone that's worth a hell of a lot more than all of us, it's all relative.
Yeah, and I'm happy that she's bought it, and I'm happy that she got so much satisfaction out of Winx and the love that's been developed between her and the horse. And then, I wouldn't say it's an impulse buy on the day, but, leading into that sale, she was like, oh, I don't want this to go to anyone else, So it just shows that love that people get attached to with an animal. And she was so emotional. I don't think I would have saw or seen anyone that emotional after buying a horse. So you could see what it meant to her.
Gosh, and just a reminder that Winx is in Folder Schnitzel. If it's a colt, after watching that go for $10 million yesterday. Oh, I mean, geez.
Well, here, hypothetically.
But then again,
I'm going to go a hypothetical.
It may never go through the ring if it's a colt.
Yeah.
Well, Justify, Coolmore bought Justify for $100 million Australian. And at the moment, that's looking like it could be a decent, well, their investment was absolute, and they're, it's going very well as a stallion at the moment.
All right.
Early days still.
Well, I'll give you a hypothetical. All right. This filly comes out and wins first race.
Oh.
Wins the first race and then put her out, have a bit of a rest, and then comes back in and looking like very promising horse, wins the next start. And then it's a colt, her next progeny. What price?
Oh. Again, and you don't know what's going on with the owners behind the scenes, but probably will never go through the ring. But say it does.
So if the filly looks as though she's going to be good.
Look, I'll start at 20. Wow. I'll start at double.
Wow.
Yes, it's Masters Week, so we're getting Evan on a couple of times. How are you, mate?
I'm very good, Mido. Very good. Greetings from Augusta National on a sunny but obscured eclipse. One second. Sorry about that.
Just getting your coffee, there. Buddy.
Just getting my coffee. Hey, spare a thought for our producers. I believe we've got three time zones happening at once right now. Is that right, Mitter?
Yes, Pup in Mumbai, yourself at Augusta, and us in the central position here in the northern beaches of Sydney.
Oh, mate, excellent. Excellent. Well, yeah, mate, plenty happening at the Masters Monday practice round. We've got lots to talk about, but mainly sort of for Aussies. You know, how's Cam Smith looking? He pulled out of Live Golf Miami last week, or Saturday, I should say, with food poisoning early in the week that was sort of catching up with him come the weekend. But Aussies would be glad to know that I went out and had a chat with him, saw him this afternoon. He was chipping and putting, light practice session, so he's still sort of on the mend. Looked a little ginger in the way he was walking. Putting was good. His speed was on, but he was sort of not holding many practice putts, which is, you know, probably one of the best putters in the world, if not the best putter in the world. And the short game looks fantastic. So rest assured, Cam looks good for the Masters. And if it's a good omen, he was actually suffering an illness when he won the Open Championship at St Andrews. So could be a good sign for old Smithy.
Ash K. Bhatia.
And what about Tiger, mate? Have we seen him around?
Yes, Clarkey. Good news on the Tiger front as well. There's been a sighting of Tiger in the wild. He came out this morning, actually. He played a practice round with a guy called Will Zalatoris, who extremely talented player. Actually, probably my tip to win this week as well, but has had, like, you know, catastrophic back surgery and injuries the last couple of years. But was famously second at the Masters to Hideki Matsuyama 3 years ago. And him and Tiger have actually bonded over, you know, their back surgery recoveries and whatnot. They played a practice round today. And Will Zalatoris said that Tiger outdrove him on a few holes. And Tiger, being 48 years of age and recovering from more surgeries than anyone in the world, that's pretty impressive. So he said Tiger was giving him a bit of crap about outdriving him. And apparently he was playing really good today. And all signs look to Tiger, you know, hopefully making the cut.
Now, have you got your chest out, Evan? I think you tipped the Texas Open winner, didn't you?
Thank you. I will not forget your advice early on in my time with Big Sports Breakfast. And you said, you know what, the thing to do with winners is keep tipping them and also tell everyone that you tipped them.
Most
and
definitely.
Yes, on the program last week, definitely I threw out Akshay Bhatia out there. Really good players, just been trending in the right way. And when you watch these form players on the PGA Tour, typically they win after sort of two or three top tens in a row or thereabouts. And Akshay was T11 at the Houston event, and I just knew he was going to play really well in San Antonio. I mean, I did expect him to win. It was a combination of form, and I really liked his odds. I thought that around that $21 mark was pretty solid, considering the guys ahead of him just weren't convincing. So he punched that last ticket into the Masters. Famously, every year, the event before the Masters, the winner of that tournament gets the very last ticket into Augusta National. So he's actually just doing a press conference right now. I was sitting in there for the first 15 minutes of it, and he just looks like he's on cloud nine, and he's a really dangerous bet this week. I don't think it's ever been done in history where a player has won the tournament before the Masters and the Masters, but and it's a little bit of a, sometimes a bit of a curse when they do that, but it's a measure of the guys in form. I think a few years ago, Corey Connors did the same thing and led after the first round. So if you're looking for a bit of value, I really like Akshay Bhatia this week. Good attitude. Great player, and he's a left-hander, and Augusta has been kind to the left-handers in the past.
Didn't he partially dislocate his shoulder?
He did, yeah. You'll never believe this, right? But he's just said in his press conference a few minutes ago, the injury stemmed from a few years ago playing pickleball. And I don't know if that's quite taken off in Australia, but pickleball is the fastest growing sport in the United States. Tennis courts are being scrapped all over the country and resurfaced to be a pickleball court. And I think he did his shoulder a few years ago, and it's sort of a recurring injury. And celebrating holding a putt to force the playoff at the event yesterday, he popped it back out and sort of had to deal with that pain in the extra holes. Got the job done and won, and now he's in the Masters. So, yeah, kind of a wacky story.
How many people are there on Monday, obviously, at Augusta? Like, for instance, the merchandise tent line already is it just outrageous?
Oh, Mido, biblical. Absolutely biblical. It looked like the queue to get into the Vatican during the middle of European summer. The line snaked out the door from the entrance to the merchandise tent, which is almost sort of near the first hole, and it snaked all the way around that building onto the driving range and back up the driving range with about, I don't know, maybe 250 yards up the driving range to the last sort of chipping green. And I'm told by a few colleagues here that yesterday during the Augusta Women's Amateur event, the final round of that, that the queue up to get into the merchandise tent was 2.5 hours. I've been covering the Masters since 2017, and I've never seen lines like that to get in.
Now, tell us a bit about this Jasper Stubbs from Melbourne. He's an amateur.
Yeah, really good East Gippsland boy, actually. Good country boy, and moved to Melbourne as a teenager. That move paid off when he won the Asia Pacific Amateur, which is one of these events that's jointly run by the RNA, which owns the British Open and also Augusta National, of course, the runners of the Master Tournament. And the winner of that every year gets an amateur spot in the Masters if they remain an amateur. And he drained two clutch birdie putts at Royal Melbourne, his home course, last year to get in. And really good attitude. He said he came here on Valentine's Day and played a couple of early practice rounds, which Masters competitors are allowed to do. They're allowed to come to the course from February onwards and start to get to know the place. And he came here for 3 days around Valentine's Day, said he had the course to himself. And I asked him in his press conference, is there anything to make him feel confident that he's not just here to make up the numbers? And he pointed to the fact that, interestingly, an amateur, Nick Dunlap, who since turned pro, won on the PGA Tour back in January, and he was the first amateur to win on the PGA Tour since Phil Mickelson, I think, in 1991. And also, this time last year, an amateur from Texas A&M, Sam Bennett, led through two rounds at the Masters, so he was really informed. So just to sort of taking confidence that, you know, it doesn't matter that he's an amateur, he's here to compete.
You mentioned at the top there'd been a solar eclipse there at Augusta today. Did anyone claim they'd had a calling during the moment, or what was it like?
Hide your retinas, boys, because the sun was 76% covered at around 3:10, which is what that was about an hour and 10 minutes ago. Certainly, looking out from the media centre over the driving range, the sky turned a little odd shade of blue, but. The Masters were handing out these sort of, you know, limited edition sunglasses. Those sort of sunglasses that look like you're going to the drive-in or a 3D movie. And, you know, of course, branded with the Masters logo all over it. They went viral on social media. People were inquiring, how do they get a pair? I've got two texts from friends back in Australia. They want a pair. So all happening here at Augusta and the eclipse, sort of a cool thing to begin the week, you know.
Great stuff. We'll be checking in, Evan, later in the week ahead of and getting your selections ahead of, well, the greatest show in golf, the Masters. Can't wait for it. Enjoy the week, mate. Thank you.
Thank you, boys. See ya.
Pup's back with us this morning and joining us from Mumbai over there, commentating on the Indian Premier League. And just overnight, some Aussie involvement, Mitchell Stark's side. He's with the Kolkata Knight Riders. They've gone down. They've been beaten by 7 wickets comfortably by the Chennai Super Kings with 7 balls remaining. Starkey, no wickets. Hasn't exactly set the world on fire considering his price tag, Pup. So I'm guessing there's a bit of pressure there building.
There is, buddy. I think there's always pressure on the overseas players because there's only 4 of them. But, yeah, I think when you're paid... I think Starkey got $3.5 million or something like that. When you're paid that sort of money for an 8-week tournament, you're going to be under the pump, even if you're bowling well or batting well. But yeah, he's only picked up 2 wickets so far. It was none for 100 in his first 2 games, in his first 8 overs. Picked up the 2 wickets, Mitchell Marsh and David Warner in the game against Delhi, and then missed out again last night. And Calcutta got beaten. That's their first loss It's an interesting one. It's funny because you get certain players over here, especially the Aussies, and those players have had really good summers back home. Mitch Marsh is another good example. He won our Alan Border medal. So from Australia's point of view, he's been exceptional. But over here, he's had, I know he's injured at the moment and he's just gone for a scan, but you have four low scores and they're talking about dropping him and picking another overseas player. So it's, yeah, you're under the pump, that's for sure. You've probably got two or three games with a little bit of slack to not be at your best. But then after that, there's just too many good overseas players sitting on the bench waiting for an opportunity. So Starkey needs to find form quickly. And again, if he's going to be, you know, if they're going to pay that sort of money, he's going to need to take some wickets.
Talking of fast bowlers then, Pop, what about this young Indian fast bowler, Yadav?
Yeah, well, he's just got a side strain, Loz. So he only bowled one over the other night. I commentated the game he was playing and he had to go off the field. So, mate, he's quick. Like, he played, I think his first two games, he's bowling well over 150 Ks. He bowled one ball at 156. He's young. His action is a little bit loose, but there's nothing wrong with it. I think he's a super talent. But now, like we've seen with a lot of young quicks, it's just going to be manage their body, try and get them fit and strong, and then deal with they're going to be injured. There's going to be little niggles like this, side strains. You know, is it a back stress fracture? Is it hamstring? They're going to go through that, especially if you're bowling at that speed. But don't worry, there's lots of excitement about him over here. They're talking about him being on the test tour, and the first test against India in Australia come our summer is at the Wacker. So imagine cutting him loose and letting him play that first test at the Wacker. That could be unbelievable to watch. But he's got a long way to go before he's there, I think, just making sure his body's fit and strong. And there's a big difference between bowling four overs in a T20 game and bowling, you know, 25 in a test match. But, yeah, he's one of a number of young, talented players over here that India continue to produce.
I saw him bowl Cam Green out, and that just looked too quick for him.
Oh, he got done. You know what, Loz, you're 100% spot on. He got done for pace. It didn't really move. It was a good leg, but Cam Green stayed leg side before, completely because of that extra speed. So, and mate, that's on an absolute belter here in India. So that's what I'm saying. Imagine him bowling at the Wacker or the Gabba. And it's nice to see. We see bowlers at the moment can reach that, you know, 140, 145. But we haven't seen anyone rapid. You know, you think back to Brett Lee, bowled 160. Sean Tate, bowled 160. Shoaib Akhtar, bowled 160. You know, we haven't seen anyone really come through with that high 150s, high 160 speed. So I think everyone loves a good fast bowler.
And, yeah, Cameron Greeny, not going, probably not living up to his price tag at the moment as well, Pup.
Well, it doesn't help having Mitch Marsh and Cam Green batting 3 and 4 for Delhi. They're both struggling for form, you know, and no wonder why they're not they're not getting the results they want. So, and tough decision, Ricky Ponting's coach, you know, so you got an Australian coach who's, he commentated the entire summer with Channel 7. He saw the form of Mitch Marsh. He saw Cam Green make runs and take wickets. You know, he might have to make, well, at the moment, he doesn't need to make a tough call because Mitch Marsh is injured. So we don't know how bad that is, how long he's going to be out for. But, yeah, there's some pressure on, like I say, on a few Aussies that are getting paid really good money and super talented players to really stand up over here in this IPL.
Just some news at home as well in cricket. The CA contract list for the women was confirmed yesterday. Former captain Meg Lenning, of course, no longer there after retiring from international cricket. All-rounder Sophie Molyneux is back on the list. That's the only change. 17 players given central contracts for the women's game. Gerard Duffy not too far away. Just in some more footy news in the NRL, massive blow for the Cowboys, Loz. Zach Labert, who's really made an impression so far this season. He's done his ACL there against the Titans in that win on the weekend. So the 21-year-old's done for the season. He really was going enormous for the Cowboys. Particularly in attack.
Yeah, for a young man, he handled himself really well. Unfortunately, yeah, the ACL injury, that's 12 months out of the game. They're starting to get some injuries, the Cowboys. You know, they lost Cohen Hess. They let go Luciano Leilua. Now they've, well, Helam Lukey was another one that's out for a period of time. Now Leibut. Cowboys are an interesting team. They've got attack in them, but I don't know whether they can defend as well as some of the other teams.
They've been leaky, haven't they?
Yeah, and leaking against the Titans.
They were lucky to win that game in the end.
Well, they were all over the Titans early, and then things changed a little bit when I think it was Chad Townsend got sent to the sin bin. The Titans made a bit of a recovery, but they're just leaking a few too many points at this stage of the season for my liking to be considered genuine threats.
Just some AFL match review news. GWS star Toby Green, he's free to play St Kilda this week, has no case to answer for a dump tackle on Gold Coast Suns player Mac Andrew. Oh, it would have been a travesty if he got suspended for that, but of course he booted 5 goals for the Giants in their 28-point victory there on the weekend. And as far as the gather-round fallout is concerned, the AFL yesterday confirmed there'll be a game in the Barossa Valley town of Lindock next year. So it seems like that's been a huge success there in South Australia. Geez, a big game Thursday night. Melbourne up against the Brisbane Lions. The Lions finally got a win there the other day against North Melbourne. But they need a big sets in Melbourne, the MCG. So real statement game for the Lions, I reckon, this loss.
Well, if they can win this game, they're back, because Melbourne are playing some really good football at the moment. And the Lions obviously got their first win of the weekend on the weekend, and most people thought that they'd be the team to beat after losing that grand final. And lucky to lose that grand final, by the way. They had their moments. But, yeah, it's a big game for them. Melbourne are a very good side, aren't they? I know you can say it about everyone, but geez, I tell you what, they'd be in some strife without their ruckman.
Maxi Gawn. Oh,
they'd be in some strife without him.
He's a linchpin, no doubt about that. But, you know, Petrarca, Oliver, Bailey Fritsch just always seems to kick goals
good,
for them.
But he gets them the ball.
Yeah. Stephen May down back. They've got a good side. Jared Duffy from TAB, a very good morning to you.
Good morning to you all.
Some movement in the premiership market. Where are we at in the NRL?
Well, we've got Penrith the Faves at $3.30. Behind them, Brisbane are out to 5, Melbourne into 7, the Roosters out to 11. Then on the $13 line, Mido, we've got North Queensland and the Warriors, Manly 15, the rest are 21 or better. A lot of people asking about South. They were actually $9 before the season got underway. They were 11 into 9. They're currently 34, and to be honest, I don't think you could take it, but they're $3.25 to even make the 8. Along with Parramatta, another side that plenty was expected from before the season. And at the other end of the table, before everything got underway, West Tigers were easily the best back to run last, or in that most losses market. Gold Coast now $1.60, and they look the goods, don't they? Oh. The Dragons are 6, West Tigers are 7, the Bulldogs 8, and South hot on their heels at $13. So, yeah, some amazing changes at the bottom end of things as well.
Wow. What about AFL flag market, Daff? How are the Giants looking?
Giants looking rather good, Clarkey. They are the $5 favourites, just ahead of Sydney at 6. Then we've got Melbourne and Carlton at 7, Collingwood 9, Port Adelaide going along quite nicely. They're now into $11. Geelong and Brisbane at $12. You were just talking, Loz, about that Thursday night match. Well, Lachie Neal is not 100%, but it looks like he's going to play with that ankle injury. They're pretty hefty outsiders, however. They're $2.85, Melbourne $1.43, a line there at 15.5 points in favour of the Demons. And Isaac Heaney is the standalone favourite to win the Brownlow. He was 12 2 weeks ago. He was 9 last week. We put him up at 7 on Monday. That's gone. He's into $6, ahead of Tom Green at 8, Marcus Bontempelli, Caleb Sarong, Christian Petrarca at 10, and the rest are 12 or better. And Connor Rozee, I don't think there's much doubt at all he would have got the 3 votes in Port Adelaide's win. He is into $13. So it's all looking good if you're a Sydney Swans or a GWS supporter.
Who was the favourite? Dacos, would he have been favourite at
Dacos
the start?
Dacos was the $5 favourite. He probably wouldn't have got a vote yet. He's at $13 now, so he's been well marked. The other big move has been Matt Rowell from the Gold Coast. He'd run through a brick wall He's into $12 as well. And the Suns haven't been too bad. Even in that loss the other day, they were okay. Mm.
What about the golf this weekend? If you're a golfing fan, the Masters, it doesn't get any better, Dave.
No, it doesn't, Loz. We've got a lot of markets open and a lot more to come in the coming 24-48 hours. Scott Scheffler, an easing favourite, 5 out to 6. Rory McIlroy, pretty solid at 12. John Rahm, of course, he won it last year. He's 14. Xander Schauffele's a little mover inwards over the last 24 hours, 19 into 17. Brooks Koepka, 19. At 21, Jordan Spieth, Hideki Matsuyama. Of the Aussies, we've got half a dozen in the field. The shortest of those is Cam Smith, who's been 26 out to 34 after missing most of the weekend with food poisoning. Minwoo Lee's there at $41. Jason Day on the same line. So there's a lot of markets open on it, as I said, but obviously the focus is on to win it. And just on that, a lot of those markets do close down or temporarily suspend once play gets underway on Thursday night, but the market to win it will remain open throughout. Once it's live betting, there's only two ways to bet, either over the telephone or if you're in a tab or a pub tab over the counter, but there's going to be plenty going on for the Masters this week.
Certainly is. Now, today in American basketball, and probably without notice here, Daff, it's the men's national championship in the NCAA.
March Madness finishes in April.
Yep.
UConn are the faves, $1.33. That's Connecticut, $1.33. Purdue, $3.35. A line there of 6.5 points in favour of Connecticut, and that minus is gone, I've seen the last hour or so. It's into $1.85. Of course, the NBA back tomorrow. I think maybe all of them go around tomorrow. Maybe just a quick update on the NBA title. The Celtics are now clear favourites at $2.75 ahead of the Denver Nuggets at $4.50. Then out to $10 for the Milwaukee Bucks. The Clippers are 11, 17 or better for the rest. The Lakers have found a bit of form, but they're still $21 to win it.
Great stuff, Daff. Thank you,
Mitter. I appreciate the feedback.
What about this? Good time to put some money on Raiders for the premiership. There you go. The optimistic Green Machine fans.
No, I'm optimistic they'll have a very good year, but I'm not optimistic for the premiership, no. I'd be doing cartwheels if that happened. I think they have played some good football to start the year. I know Ricky said after the press conference, or during the press conference the other night, you know, that's why he gets so disappointed with his team, because he knows what he's got there. That'll be the key for them, is just to be consistent with their football, because they have got some young players. So I think they'll be up and down. I think they'll ride that roller coaster. But I reckon they've got a good team heading into the future. No doubt about that.
Yeah, you're 5'8". He's been good player, hasn't he?
Timoko's a good player. Seb Chris is a good player. Yeah. Savage is now starting to do what we expected him to do. And their forward pack is strong, and they've got plenty of forwards sitting in reserve grade that just haven't been given an opportunity yet, that are young and hungry. So, if they keep the nucleus of this team together, the next couple of years is looking bright.
Coming up, Adam Pengilly, of course, there'll be a Barry draw this morning for the Queen Elizabeth Stakes, day two of the championships. And DS, I'm sure, will have it all covered on Racing HQ later this morning. And Adam Pengilly from the Sydney Morning Herald was there as the Winx filly went through the ring at the Inglis sale yesterday, the Easter yearling sale. Morning, Adam. How are you, mate?
Morning, Mido. Morning, boys. Just trying to recover after a pretty busy and long day yesterday, but great theatre we saw.
Yeah, what was it like out there, Adam? I watched it online and it looked amazing. There were so many people out there. We were unsure what we were going to see. We were unsure of the figure that the filly would attract, and a lot of people were saying 4 to 5 million. I'm assuming everyone was just blown away by 10.
Yeah, no one could believe it, Loz. And you guys have spent enough time around horse sales these days to know that there's just this constant hum, isn't there, throughout the whole day, whether it's an auctioneer's voice in the background or people having a bite to eat with their cutlery or drinks clinking and just general conversation. But when she walked into the ring yesterday, that filly, it just felt deathly silent. No one was saying a single word, just listening for what was going to happen. And you could sort of almost feel the tension just building in that room when she walked into the ring. And I was a bit like you guys. We were having a bit of a guessing game on air yesterday, weren't we, about how much she would sell for. And I sort of thought, well, at least 3 million. She might get to 4, but I wouldn't think she'd get too much past 5, to be honest. And like literally in the first 20 seconds, it was above $5 million and climbing. So Yeah, it's certainly made for great theatre. I was standing actually just quite fortuitously just a few yards from Mark Webster, the English chief executive, who was on the phone to this American tycoon, John Stewart, and doing the bidding for him in the room. And you could see Mark had a little smirk across his face, not only because he runs the English company and wanted a great result for the filly, but the man on the other end of the line was going to drive a really, really high price. And you could hear the bids coming in, sort of went to $5.5 million, $6 million. And then it might have jumped straight to $7.5 million after that. And you thought, wow, okay, this is going to be incredible. And the gasps you heard in the theatre were quite remarkable. And then it just turned out that Debbie Capitis just reached into those pockets a little bit more than John Stewart and secured it for $10 million.
Did we think that Debbie was going to buy it?
I think there was always a suspicion that she's going to be involved, Loz. But I think the common theme from a lot of people was that she might have been involved in a partnership, maybe with Cornwall wanting to buy back into the filly, or she'd sort of team up with someone else. And she actually spoke after the sale there yesterday and said, up until a few weeks ago, the family didn't think they were going to be able to purchase her. They just didn't think it was going to be on the agenda. They were happy to sell her at auction. And then I think that emotional attachment really grew in the last few weeks when they obviously visited the filly a number of times and spent a bit more time with her. And that's when she said, okay, if we can rustle up the money together and get together and try and buy her back, we're going to do it. And the way she was bidding there yesterday, she wasn't going to get beat. It could have gone to $11, $12, maybe even $15 million, and she was going to buy that filly back. So, yeah, well done to her. And it's quite surreal, guys. We were obviously broadcasting from Inglis there yesterday morning. And remember, we saw the family having an early morning photo with Winx's filly. They paraded her out there early in the morning. And I asked Debbie after, I said, was that because it was like a final goodbye? You thought you were saying your goodbyes to her? And she goes, I just didn't know. I didn't know. I wanted to make sure I had a special memory if that was the case. We didn't know what was going to happen. And she was really grateful to get that photo. It would have been about 7:30, 8 o'clock yesterday, Middo, wouldn't it?
Yep.
Wouldn't it? It was pretty early in the morning. And then obviously she ended up buying her back later in the afternoon.
Adam, did anyone speak to John Stewart? Like $9 million budget and you get dusted. Was he devastated?
I'm not sure, Clark, if he was absolutely devastated. I think he's obviously a guy who's, I'll put it in these terms, loaded. it doesn't matter. It probably doesn't matter where his money goes. And he would have liked to have captured the filly or bought the filly, no doubt. But I think one of his main goals was to ensure that the filly stayed in Australia. And with Debbie, that's going to be the case. So he was having some sort of private party, I think, in Kentucky there last night, American time, watching the sale. And then, obviously, Mark Webster actually hung up the phone even before the gavel came down on the final bid. So he obviously knew that his limit was $9 million. And once Debbie went to $10 million, Mark pretty much just hung up the phone and waited for Jonathan Darcy to do the honours. So he'd obviously set himself a limit. I don't know if he's disappointed, Clarkie, to answer your question. I'm not really sure. He's a showman, obviously. He's clearly a showman. He's been buying up horses left, right and centre all around the world in the last 6 to 12 months. And I'm sure we'll see him back down in Australia in coming months. He actually bought a $3 million yearling late yesterday after missing out on Winx's filly. So he was still quite active late into the day.
Yeah, no, I was about to ask you, did he spend any of that $9 million yesterday? Because I know he spent some money on the first day there. And Chris Waller, he'll be the trainer of the filly?
Yeah, he will, Loz. That was pretty much a given, wasn't it, that Chris was going to train the horse if Debbie Capitis bought it. Chris, as you can imagine, was extremely emotional yesterday afternoon after the sale. He was in tears for a fair part of it. And listen, when you spend this amount of money on a horse, regardless of who they are, there'll be no risks taken with his filly. Like if she starts her prep work, has a couple of preparations in Chris's stable and has a couple few gallops and maybe one or two trials, and it doesn't look like she's going to really measure up to be a good horse, I suspect that her racing career might be limited. On the flip side, if she does look like she's got a bit of ability and she can get some, you know, maybe get a city win on the board or maybe even some black type, she'll be handled very, very carefully. Because the real beauty for Debbie is that she's trying to build a dynasty here with this family now, and she's got residual value with this filly now. She'll hopefully breed with her for many, many years to come and keep that Winx line going for generations.
I reckon there'll be only one jockey in contention to ride this filly as well.
Well,
would you agree?
He's got to come back from Hong Kong, Mido. He's over there in Hong Kong at the moment, and it's not easy to get a release from the Hong Kong Jockey Club to come back and ride in Australia. So they tend to look a little bit favourably on applications to come back to ride in big Group 1 race meetings, but how do you turn around and say, oh, I want to go back to Australia to ride this horse in a Wyong Maiden or something like that? Do you reckon they'll agree?
Actually, maybe not with all due respect, maybe not for a Wyong Maiden, knowing the Hong Kong Jockey Club. So, yeah, it might be someone else.
Yeah, it might be. We'll find out. Got to ask you before you go, mate. South, the latest on South.
Loz. I don't know where they go. It appears that at least it's going to come to some sort of head this week in terms of Latrell Mitchell. So South Sydney bosses are going to sit down with him today and have, I think, what can be described as a pretty forthright conversation about where things are at. They're saying that this has been planned for a couple of weeks now. It's not something that's just emerged after the incidents against the Warriors on the weekend. But did you guys hear Gus's comments on 100% footy last night?
I did.
Yeah.
Whether he actually really wants to play footy, Gus was questioning. If someone sat down with him and asked him that.
I thought that was some really measured comments, Mido, don't you think?
Yeah. I've wondered that for a while.
Yeah,
go for it.
I said, sorry, mate. My theory is that let's sit down and just ask him. I said, mate, do you still want to play this game? Do you see yourself having a long-term future in this sport? Because if you don't, well, let's work out something to make you happy. Because that's what matters at the end of the day, is Latrell just being happy. And clearly the way he's been playing the last month and some of those incidents on the weekend suggest he's a very frustrated footballer at the moment. He's a very angry footballer at the moment. He's not helping himself. He's not helping his team. He's not helping his coach. That's the reality of the situation at the moment. So I'd be very interested to see how that conversation goes with South's bosses today. But maybe having a few weeks off might be the best thing for him personally, just for him to reset and get his head in the right space and see if he really has a passion to play rugby league still.
Yeah, it's probably more about, for mine, do you want to be the best version of yourself?
Mm.
What does that look like? What's the best version of Latrell on and off the field? And let's see whether we can work towards making that happen, because he's got so much to give. We see what he does in the Indigenous community, the Indigenous space, and he can have a real effect on young kids in communities, but he can also have a really strong effect on people on the field with his actions. And what we're seeing at the moment, if we look and see a frustrated player that people think is not really committed to South Sydney, and that's not who you want to be as a footy player. You want people to say about you that you're giving your all week in, week out. So he's got to work out how does he get the best version of himself, both on and off the field, and how does he become happy? And if he does that, then I think we're not talking about Latrell, we're talking about how well South Sydney are going.
Yeah, I think all very valid points, Loz.
Thank you, Adam. Have a great day.
See you, boys.